Hello from East Meets West, and hello on this 14th podcast spotlight of East Meets West. For those who do not know what East Meets West is, it could be that there are still some people who don't know it. We are an Vienna-based, let's say, NGO, type NGO, who focuses on LGBTIQ businesses and human rights issues in the CEE region, the Central East European region, which used to be 15 countries, but now we are going up to Armenia and everywhere, so it's a big thing. We celebrate this year our 10th anniversary. That means we have been doing this for 10 years, and we still are, I think, for the moment, the only one who really focuses on this extremely interesting but very challenging region. So that is, why do we do this podcast, this Spotlight podcast? Well, we have, of course, every year our annual international conference. This year also, we have it on the 16th of June. And that is where we normally meet our people, the people that are interested, our contacts, our allies. We see them there. But of course, once a year is not enough. So therefore, we say, look, we meet in the whole year. We meet interesting people, interesting organizations, and we also want to give them the stage to show and to talk about what happened. And of course, we also give stage to happenings for ourselves, for organizational things, events that happen during the year, which is in this case also what we will do now. That is about what we do with podcasts and spotlights. You can always, if you go to the website, you can see all the ones that we had before. Extremely interesting things are there. You will see this. And today we are looking at a very specific thing, a very specific activity where East Meets West was involved, supporting. Not the leader, but we were supporting it. And that was the Canadian LGBTIQ Chamber of Commerce that was organizing a trade mission to Vienna. And that was done in cooperation with East West. Now, if you look at all the people on the screen in front of you, the one that is speaking now, I am one of the two co-founders of East Meets West. My name is Ludo, and well, that is it. You don't need to know more about that. But perhaps we can also introduce the two guests that we have here, two Canadian guests, and of course, the other co-founder of East Meets West.
Sure, maybe let me jump in. I'm Pavel, I'm the second co-founder of East Meets West, and Ludo was already revealing what is the focus of today's spotlight. So it's the trade mission. So what happened on 20th of March this year, we as East Meets West, we had the privilege to welcome not only for Darrell and Cass, who are on the spotlight today with us, but also the diverse businesses from Canada in Vienna. And with this also, we actually broke the history because it was the first ever LGBTIQ plus trade mission to Vienna and to continental Europe. We have now the great pleasure to talking to you two. Welcome here. And maybe let's start with a basic thing. I mean, who do you are? Perhaps the first thing, but what is CGLCC? What does CGLCC stand for, and what are you aiming for?
My name is Cass Elliott. I'm the Global Program Manager for CGLCC. So I guess, organized and led the Canadian side of the trade mission and based in Vancouver, Canada.
Great. Thanks, Cass. My name is Daryl Sherman. My pronouns are he, him, and I'm the CEO and co-founder of the CGLCC, which is Canada's 2SLGBTQI+ Chamber of Commerce. So first of all, thank you folks for having us here today. It's always great working with the two of you. I think we go way back. We've been working with you since I think the inception of East Meets West. And so it's always great to be able to connect with you again and to be here with you on Spotlight. So thanks for the opportunity and thanks certainly for the work that you did in making this trade mission possible, which we'll get into more detail later. But to answer your question around who is CGLCC, so we are not a national nonprofit organization formed 20 years ago, actually, this year. So we've been around for a while. You know, we haven't always been that active over those 20 years, but, you know, certainly we have been around. And I think it's one of the things that, you know, as we've been kind of working this the past few months around kind of how we recognizing our 20th anniversary, you know, one of the things that struck me is that when we first formed, you know, we had our mission and kind of our vision of what we wanted the organization to do. And it's held true over the past 20 years. And it's really been to how are we supporting Canada's LGBTQ, how are we helping to economically empower our community and ultimately to drive social change? And that's really what we're here to do, is how can we continue to advance inclusion for the 2S LGBTQ community, not only in Canada, but globally? How can we continue to advance rights for them through the power of economics, through business? Business plays an important role in continuing to create greater human rights for our community. And so that's what I think we at the CGLCC are really working and striving to do.
Gentlemen, I would like to ask the following. You said you exist now for 20 years. Congratulations. It's double what we have done, but we are still young and dynamic, so it can still change. But there's one other thing that I would like to ask you. These 20 years, I suppose it didn't go full speed from the beginning. It was really, a growing stadium. How did this go? You're so long on the market. How was this journey for you up to now? Was it with going up, going down? When did it really start, the learnings? How did it go in 20 years?
Yeah, you know, it's been an interesting ride over the 20 years, I'd say. Certainly, you know, when we first launched, things were very different than they are now. And it's certainly, at least in North America, and appreciate that things, especially some of the countries that you work in, you know, there's still a lot of work to be done. But 20 years ago in Canada, certainly we didn't have the rights and that we do now. And so really where we started was, you know, working very closely with our counterparts south of the border at the NGLCC, who had formed a year earlier. And they too kind of had that same mission, is really how do we make sure that LGBT businesses have a place at the table, that that they're actively included in our economy. And so a big piece of how we do that is through procurement. And so in the US, that's really what they started to build, is how do we create more opportunities for LGBT businesses in federal and private sector procurement opportunities. We tried that in 2003, and it didn't go well. You know, Canada was not ready yet for that. And so the landscape between, we realized quickly the landscape between the US and Canada were very different. And so we shelved that concept of what we call now supplier diversity. And we shelved that for about 10 years, actually. So we worked on other program areas for the first few years, notably a lot around within the tourism industry, and really how do we create inclusive spaces, not only for our visitors, but also for our employees and internal team members. So that's really where we focused a lot over the first few years. And then I guess, Ludo, to your point, we had a little dip perhaps for a while where we weren't that active. We were kind of reevaluating kind of what was our goal. But I'd say it was back in 2014 then where we relaunched our supplier diversity program. And that's really where the momentum started to build again. And that's where that was kind of, I'd say that the turning point for the organization in terms of from a growth perspective. The landscape had changed quite a bit over those past 10 years. Corporations now understood a little bit better, perhaps, the importance of diversity, equity, and inclusion. Businesses were more open to identify as being LGBT, and certainly the awareness of the importance that our businesses had on the economy was growing. So I think tides really started to change in 2014.
We hosted you in Vienna. You came also with your diverse businesses to Vienna. So what is it that actually is behind such a trade mission in terms of the aim? What is it that you wanted to achieve with the first LGBTIQ trade mission to Austria, to Vienna?
Yeah, so I'm happy to jump in here. So for us, the biggest element is looking for other ways to enrich the different stakeholders that we're already working with. So whether that's corporates, members, or global affiliates like you, taking kind of a holistic approach to how we can go about doing that. And trade missions really cover all of those bases. They give our suppliers a chance to get some training, learn about a new market, get a foothold, hopefully, in a new market. If we have an affiliate chamber that's there that we can work alongside, it opens up a whole level of partnerships and corporate access, which gives value back to folks who are sharing the same mission that we are, and allows you to provide something to your corporates, allows us to provide something to our suppliers. And broadly speaking, just make the businesses that we're working with and the businesses that you folks are working with able to have those opportunities for peer-to-peer support where they can talk about what it's like to be an LGBT-owned and operated business in Canada or in your market, as well as to just make their overall business more robust to changes in their local market. We know in Canada that businesses that export do significantly better than businesses that don't. A lot of Canadians get a little bit shy about stepping outside of the Canadian market at first. And if they do, they want to step into the States. So we really wanted to try to create a path to support them to look at other spaces and take advantage of some of the opportunities that come with that. In Europe, the CETA free trade agreement between Canada and the EU. In the UK as well, we're in the final rounds of negotiation for a free trade agreement there, which will be a separation point between us and the States for how we'll be able to relate to that market. Mentioning the UK because we went there as part of this mission as well, just before coming into Vienna.
I mean, you have there a number of companies that will join you. Does it demand, because if somebody else would try to have to follow that example of a trade mission, does it demand a lot of the participating businesses to participate in a trade mission? What is, in fact, the preparation they have to do?
Yeah, so it's really, I mean, it's like anything. It's what you put into it, you'll get out of it. So the businesses that we get, we're selecting already from folks that are certified diverse suppliers here in Canada. So we know a good deal about what they're doing for their work already. We know a little bit about their caliber. We promote openly to other spaces as well, because Canada actually has a really cool program where you can get your certification costs covered if you participate in something like a trade mission. So that can be reimbursed back. So it's a good opportunity to pull new folks in who are maybe thinking about certification or didn't realize the benefits of it. Once they're part of the mission, we also get to open different supports to them. So the delegates who came on this mission, they had 50% coverage for flights and per diem accommodations, which is a really big advantage when you're talking about smaller businesses that are looking to do something new and potentially a bit scary, to make that investment a little bit easier. And then alongside that, with our partnerships with you folks, with the Canadian government, with some of our corporates as well, or sorry, some of our donors as well, we're able to provide some preliminary training. So for this mission, that looked like Trade Commissioner Services, which is a big federal body here in Canada, providing free trade agreement training to the delegates. So showing them how to navigate it, how to make sure that they're getting all the benefits of that. We also have pitch coaching sessions. So we help them refine what their pitches will look like so that while they're doing the meetings with the different corporates and when they're having the networking opportunities, they're able to say exactly what it is they're trying to do in that market and what they're looking for. Which we've had pretty positive feedback from the delegates and from the corporates meeting with them on the other side. We also help them navigate what are the other available resources in the local market. And then, as you two both know, the other benefit of trade missions is it's not just landing and then starting a bunch of B2B conversations right away. There's also room for workshops for introductions to local market resources as well, such I believe we had VBA and the Austria Business Association as well to present to them. So in both those cases, it gives a whole scope of local partners that they can then access if they're successful in those markets too.
We heard the pitches. So we had the 12 businesses in Vienna. They were amazing. So obviously here the work of CGLCC to help them to be able to pitch in 3-4 minutes, very crisp, ready to the point, but quite also in an attractive way. I mean, we most of us were simply jealous here from continental Europe. The second feedback is I met actually one of the entrepreneurs from Austria, who was also part of the trade mission. So it's a diverse business who is part of East Meets West Network. And he's still in touch with the counterparts and one of the businesses from Canada. They actually now are trying to find out a certain way of cooperating on a completely different market together. So you actually, you never know what's coming out from such a event. But I still wonder, so are there any specific opportunities or where do you see the opportunities? Would it be in a specific industry? Is the specific type of a work that the businesses are doing? Is it a certain specific size of the business which is really fitting such a trade mission?
The wonderful thing about our community of communities is they are creative and they're able to find, water through rocks, right? They're able to find their own path and explore kind of every opportunity that's there when they're given the permission to be able to do so in a space that maybe they didn't have access to before. So some of the feedback we've gotten in the first month already from the status updates for how the businesses have done is we've had a few that have secured new contracts, new deals specifically. Those seem to be tending a little bit more towards the consulting and marketing side of folks. We've had a few new partnerships to explore basically how to leverage each organization's resources to try to get new business, the one you mentioned in another market. We had a couple folks who are connected to engineering and architecture. So obviously those projects scope on a much different timeline, but by working collaboratively together and being able to pitch between these two organizations on projects where they'll have counterparts working on both sides. So there seems to be, the short answer is it doesn't seem to be super specific as to exactly what the benefit was, but it seems that there's been quite a few benefits, certainly in collaboration, certainly in sharing leads in markets where either one of them does or doesn't have the footprint, but knows somebody now that they can connect with, and in some cases, direct contacts for sure.
I think one of you mentioned also that Vienna and Austria was one of two countries that you were working on. We were indeed Austria, and then we were the first in the continent, because since Brexit, we consider UK as no longer part of us, but you were also in the UK. I suppose different environments. The UK is looking for much more new international corporations. I think the UK is also part of your Commonwealth, part of this family. How was this compared to what happened in Austria, where you come in for you a completely new, strange environment in business, which is anyway in every case that you do this. So how was that step? How was the comparison between the two?
It was interesting because I think just the Canadian-UK connection, that there already existed a lot of opportunities, I'd say, for small businesses where they had some type of connection with other organizations or other corporations. So there is, I think, probably from a starting point, a little bit more advanced. But that being said, I think what we found with, to echo what Cass is saying in terms of what we found coming out of Austria and Vienna was that some great new opportunities that, we didn't expect, so just that ability to connect some of our LGBT-owned businesses with your entrepreneurs, with some of your corporations there, that was all, a lot of it was new ground that we were setting. And so I think that was also really exciting to see how we can create something new and see where it can continue to evolve. But Cass, you probably have some specific points.
I would say too, the other piece that was a bit different is the folks we spoke to in the UK are definitely still very conscientious of the Brexit, and they're kind of responding even in conversations in, okay, this thing is happening and what is it going to look like? They're still kind of sorting that out, where obviously the EU has continued to march on and has their ideas of exactly what they're doing next. So the excitement level that we were getting from some of the other spaces that came. So for folks who don't know, there was quite a few of trade representatives from other jurisdictions on the Canadian side who came to witness the mission and participate. And they were all very eager to meet with the Canadian groups that were coming to talk about how they could work more with you folks, to talk about how we come to those markets as well. So there's a lot of enthusiasm, which I would say was probably the biggest difference. One had a little bit more of a starting point, and the other had more enthusiasm to continue to build.
How would you define a successful trade mission, or how would you even kind of paint the ideal trade mission?
I think that one of the big ways for us is also making sure that we take the time to evaluate that over the course of enough time to get the feedback. So right at the end of the trade mission, we do an evaluation. We also try to do one usually around the 6 month or the 1 year mark so that the businesses have a chance to develop those leads and partnerships and share them with us. And then we use that information to guide the planning for future missions as well. So in some cases, that's us learning what the delegates feel like they needed to be able to make the most of the mission. In other cases, it's also for us to manage the expectations for the delegates coming, because one of the hindrances to being able to enjoy the mission for what it can be, as soon as we explain to the delegates on our side during recruitment that that's usually not what it looks like, it's a chance to introduce yourself to these spaces, to get a foothold, to build partnerships, and there probably will be some deals, maybe not as you're getting ready for your check-in for your departure flight, but sometime in that process, then the delegates come in also with less pressure of how they're going to experience the mission, how they're going to evaluate their own successes, and they perform better. So I would say everything from the feedback from what the delegates give of what their felt experience of doing the mission was, the actual contracts that we're seeing on paper, usually get reported at that 6 month and 1 year line, sometimes sooner. And then the feedback obviously from partners and corporates as well of what the engagement level was and the interest level.
But I always compare this when you go to a conference. Yeah, you go to a conference and you listen to what the speakers. My impression is always, my experience is that if you go back from a conference and you meet there one or two people that are interesting, or you hear somebody speak who has something really to say that interests you, your conference is a success. You don't go there to have all that information. And I think the expectation that was also in here the case is that you meet each other, and you will probably get something from it, in the sense that perhaps a deal, perhaps an understanding, perhaps in the future you know each other, you know each other for the moment, because of course this is a first rate mission for two countries that are not, let's say, they don't know each other very well, let's say it this way. And on the other hand, of course, you have a group of people, LGBT entrepreneurs, that are still a growing entity, let's say it this way. You don't have them when for instance there is a trade mission from Germany to France, it probably looks a little bit different. Yeah, that's normal. But this is thing, and I think I was surprised being there that it worked. It really worked when you see people talk, and the clever ones, they made businesses, they see it, they stay in contact, and that was for me a very pleasant surprise.
Yeah, and while we may be new to each other, we did learn that great fact from VBA that Canada and Austria have voted the most similar to each other in the UN to any two countries. So similar but analogous.
Perfect, that's good.
I was wondering if you now move a little bit aside of the trade mission, what else is on your desk? So it's probably trade missions are definitely embedded part of your program, but what else is there that you are working on?
The desk is very full right now. there's a lot of exciting things that we're working on. So obviously the global piece is one of our core activities. We're actually working on our annual US trade mission that'll be taking place coming up in August. But outside of kind of on the trade side of things, we continue, as I mentioned at the start, you know, continue to focus around supplier diversity and how do we continue to create procurement opportunities. And so we've been doing a lot of work on the advocacy side here in Canada, working with the federal government to continue to advance opportunities for our diverse businesses collectively to have the opportunity to bid on federal government contracts. Yeah. And so the landscape here in Canada is slightly different, as mentioned before, than the US. And so there's still a lot of work to be done on that. So advocacy is a big piece of what we've been working at. One of the programs that we rolled out, I guess it was last year, a little bit of a different angle from, you know, what we've done around focusing on supporting LGBT entrepreneurs, is really supporting kind of the broader business ecosystem in making their businesses more LGBT inclusive. And so we have a program that really accredits those organizations that have inclusive policies and procedures and programs for employees, as well as customers and visitors. So that's something that's really exciting, and it's been really taken off over the last year. So really proud of that one. One of the other things that, you know, we've been working on for the last several years, which I'm also very proud of, is, you know, our support that we're providing to young queer entrepreneurs, helping them start and grow their business, providing them mentorship. We took this program national a few years ago, and it's continued to grow, and the impact that that's having in setting up our future leaders is really exciting. So, you know, so lots of things on the go, some hopefully some exciting things to announce in the coming months. I'll have to come back and do an update in a few months, but so we're working on some new things that will continue to have impact, not only for Canadian LGBT business in the community, but hopefully globally.
Yeah, for us also, it was the first time that we did this, the first time that East Meets West supported a trade mission. I think I've never seen it before, certainly not within our community, certainly not in Austria. I was happy that I was not in Vienna, but in Belgium, in Antwerp, because I saw Pavel working day and night for the trade mission. But I must say it was really a big experience. It made our organization also, I think, richer in what we can do. And certainly a learning for me, what I saw is that it's don't be afraid to do it. Yeah, don't be afraid to start this. If it looks like something impossible, you will be surprised how it at the end works out in a positive way. So for us, it was an investment, but a rich one, I think. Yeah.
What would be your message to LGBTIQ entrepreneurs out there in Central Eastern Europe?
I can start. So I'd say for any of you entrepreneurs, to reach out to these two folks here that are on this call that run East Meets West. They have built a very impressive organization with a focus of supporting you and supporting the LGBT community broadly throughout Central and Eastern Europe. So leverage the great resource that you have there, because they are making some amazing strides in continuing to push and drive change in that part of the world.
Yeah, I think that sounds great. And once you've done that, then you can come and look at our great Canadian businesses. So we have our beautiful delegate directory, which is still available on our website. You can check out the businesses that came to Vienna that are probably already working in your space. You can come over to Canada for our Global Summit in June, or our Black and White Gala in the fall. And hopefully we'll get to connect with you for another mission in the future.
And I might add one more then, since I'll bring it back to, you know, the topic here, which was around trade. And I think it's, you know, to kind of build on what Ludo said is don't be afraid. You know, sometimes I think when we talk about global trade, it can seem overwhelming. And sometimes we think that it's only for large organizations and large businesses. Anybody can do it. You know, global trade is so much more accessible now than it has ever been. And that's one of the things that I think really kind of came out of COVID, is that everybody can be working internationally and trading internationally. So don't be afraid to look at that. It opens amazing opportunities for you to grow your business. So, you know, again, to talk about what we've been able to accomplish with bringing our entrepreneurs to Austria and to Vienna. And connecting with your businesses there, and hopefully that we'll be able to welcome some of your businesses to Canada to create and continue to provide those opportunities for them as well.
Well, gentlemen, thanks a lot for joining us for the spotlight today. Once again, it's been a great pleasure to have you in Vienna on the March 20th and 21st. Thank you for trusting us as East Meets West to host you well and to bring you to the right audience in the context of the trade mission.
All the people that are now listening to us and looking at you, when they have questions, remarks, send them to East Meets West. It's very easy. And we will see that it comes to you and to the possible partners that you have. So nothing goes lost. It's we are ready for that.
And maybe one more reminder once again, but Cass already mentioned it, all of the documentation of the trade mission is still on the website. I think it's on the website of CGLCC. It's also on the website of East Meets West, with also all of the diverse businesses, their contacts, but also maybe a few slides about, in general, supply diversity and why it matters and why it needs definitely further attention.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Contact them. Sorry, is that okay that I said that? I'm driving them all to you, but I think it's true because I think, you know, people need to know that there are resources out there, that there's support networks out there, and you are the best resource that they have. And so I just really want to make sure that they know that.
Congratulations from my side for 20 years. Yeah. I mean, we are planning, as Ludo said, we are now 10 years as East Meets West organization. So we are planning quite some festivities throughout the year. But I can only imagine that how many you are now having, especially how big your conference in summer will be, and then this black and white gala. Maybe, Ludo, we should pack the bags and come over to Canada, right, to join the celebration.
No problem. I was just thinking, when we will be 20 years old, I will be 77. That is, I mean, well, I hope I will make it. Let's say it this way. It's amazing how a man can, it's just, well, lucky numbers at 77. With that, you can in Las Vegas win a million. That's great. No, it looks good. It looks good. But
do you want to jump in? I can, you can, it's okay.
Well, I'll start and then you can jump in. I think...
Don't be surprised if you see yourself on YouTube, yeah? It happened to me once, I was watching on YouTube, and suddenly I say, but I know that voice, I see myself on a podcast. What the hell am I doing on YouTube? Well, yeah, it was not a big success, I didn't make a big thing about it, but you never know where you arrive at the end. And I think
you're a celebrity.
By making contacts, it works.
I just want to say that we meet each other in, when is the Black and White Gala once again?
In November 10th. Are you coming?
Well, I mean, it's a 20th anniversary, isn't it?
You have to be here. It's going to be big. It's going to be good. there is always a seat with your names on it. So just let me know and we'll make it happen.
Yeah. Don't put stupid ideas in his head, you know, that's the problem.
Well,
we're always trying to save money and he's going to do that. No, we will see.
I think you can pass on Burning Man this year and make your way to Toronto then.
It's true.
That's true. Now that he is a father with a girl, he cannot go to Burning Man. That is impossible. It's no longer
but
suitable.
She can go with us.
She can come to the gala.
Yeah, I have now the excuse that I'm an old man and I'm not really into these big travels anymore. So yeah, we send the young kids there.
Yeah,
it's great talking to you guys. Really great.
Thank you guys. Let us know if there's anything we can do.
Bye bye. Take care. Bye bye.